My name is Fad Nassar, and I'm an associate professor at the American University in Cairo. Obviously, it's located in Cairo. And I've got the graveyard shift here, so I'll try and be quick and tell you what I want to tell you as quickly as I can. In addition to teaching at the university, I also consult with an engineering firm. And we often face some optimization problems in our design process. So what I want to do today is tell you these kinds of problems, give you sort of my experience, my two cents on what kind of problems we try and solve and how to solve them, and give you at least two approaches that we've been tinkering with. It's obvious we've been, we face some blocks, but we go around them the easy way. There's obviously much more efficient and rigorous ways you can go around them, but I'll tell you how we basically do it. First of all, it's better if you try, if you're an architecture, obviously you make the most impact on your design if you try to optimize it early on. So if you start your optimization in the conceptual design stage. However, in real life, at least for the kinds of projects we work on, I found that we end up usually doing optimization after the building has been set. And we get some, we got the building is there, and then they start, well, can't you really optimize that part? So we end up with problems like this. This is a building in Saudi Arabia. It's like a data center for the largest telecom company there called Mobile. And it's basically a black box. It's just a box because it houses computers. And one of the things they have was this shading device they had on the top. And they asked us, well, it's good if you can close this whole thing, but our electromechanical engineers said no, they wanted to have some ventilation because they have the chillers and the mechanical equipment up there. So it's it basically became, well, if you close it all, you really shade the building, and if you don't, or if you leave it open, then you have ventilation for the mechanical equipment. So it's a trade-off. So automatically I spotted the trade-off, and we said, all right, let's try and optimize it. We had a little bit of time. Obviously, we could have built this into a energy plus model and then looked at ways to optimize the openings, the design of this particular shading device, so we can maximize our benefits. As an alternative, actually, this turned out to be a very bad, bad optimization problem, because at the end it really make a difference. So after we did all this work, the difference wasn't that much. But I'll show you an example where the difference didn't make that much. So here, these are the louvers, and we said basically we have an objective function that is combined from this spacing. So we want to maximize the amount of clear spacing we have between this edge and that edge, right? But at the same time, we want to maximize the amount of shading we have on the surface. Our design parameters are basically the angle here, the shape and the dimensions of these louvers, as well as the spacing and where they are. So we went through an optimization routine, and I'll show you how we did that. We did that using Rhino, Diva for Rhino, little sister, Diva for Grasshopper. And thank God we didn't spend that much time on it, because at the end, once we ran it, it didn't really make a difference as far as the design parameters that we had set. It made some improvements, but it wasn't that much of an improvement. So we basically used Viva for Grasshopper, and we solved this problem. The other problem that really actually did make a difference was this building here. This is a building that has a facade overlooking a very old historic part of Alexandria in Egypt as well. And because all the rooms had to see the view, we had to do this, what we call a light pocket. We do this design a lot in Egypt, where we basically stagger our rooms one behind the other so they can all get views, but they only have a small window that overlooks the design. This obviously had the potential of being a very dark light well. And because we're on the clear skies, it wasn't very clear what would be the best dimensions or aspect ratios for this particular light well, especially if you consider the interaction between the materials we have here. So our task was, well, why don't we try and see if we can optimize or find out what are the aspect ratio of this light well, and especially that in this case, there are actually two light wells. One was coming in out of the other. As you can see here, there was one and then another one inside it. So we started working on this particular problem, and um, we we were able, because this actually, if you look at the pocket depth versus the width, because of the clear sky, as you rotate the as you basically vary these aspect ratios, it wasn't very clear. And we were looking at a very rudimentary, you know, very basic, which is the average luminance. We should have looked at something like useful daylight index or daylight autonomy or something in that case. But we were just looking at average values because we didn't know better. But now that we're doing the design, we'll probably look at one of these. And we were able to basically come up with an aspect ratio that that basically gave us a good view, but all at the same time was a compromise in terms of daylight. So these are the kind of problems you would want to do optimization with. I'm actually, my background is in architecture, but the reason, the way I got introduced into radiance was back in 2002 when we were doing some work with David. I did my PhD in construction, so we did use gradients for nighttime lighting construction projects. And back then, there wasn't a lot of tools you can use for optimization. So what I'll try and do here very quickly, because I'm not sure how many people have heard of, say, GenOpt? All right, good. How many people have tried to play with GenOpt and Radiance? All right, good. So I'll show you how we did it, and maybe you can guys help us out. And how many people have tried to play out with optimizing using Grasshopper and Diva and Galapagos? All right, cool. So we have two here and two here. So for the rest of us, I'll show you what we did. These are the two methods that we did. We used, played around with Galapagos, and I'll tell you what are the advantages of one method versus the other. So why should you use one versus the other, and what we found as far as looking at it. First of all, let's look at some optimization. I'm not going to go into too much math, but I'll just tell you the main two kinds of optimization techniques. Obviously, if you have a function like this, it becomes very easy to optimize it, because if you remember from your high school math, you can just take the derivative, equate it to zero, and then do your simple math and find out what the optimum is. Unfortunately, with simulation software such as Radiance or Energy Plus, you don't have a closed form function. In addition to not having a closed form function, the actual function you get from Radiance might be discontinuous or might be non-smooth. For example, depending on the fitness function you select. For example, we found that if you use something like daylight autonomy, that's always a very discontinuous, non-smooth function. If you use an average value, it's not as much. So the functions themselves, depending on the fitness, and it's all, to us, is basically we try different things. So to solve this problem, you have basically two approaches. One approach is to use an evolutionary technique, genetic algorithms, particle swarm, things like that, or the related one, like what they call non-gradient-based methods. Or alternatively, use gradient-based methods. Now, if you go with the route for Grasshopper and Galapagos, you are basically limited to the evolutionary technique. In fact, only one technique, which is genetic algorithm, because that's the way you can go. If you go with the route of GenOpt, you have many, many other alternatives that you can play. So that's the first advantage, straight off the bat. If you go with Galapagos, you're stuck with one genetic algorithm, and the amount of things, variations you can do to improve your functions are limited. However, if you go with GenOpt, you have many, many other algorithms you can use in addition to controlling the parameters. Well, just again, these are some of the gradient-based techniques that you can use in GenOpt. It has something called a Armijo gradient algorithm. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. But basically what it is that although you don't have a gradient, you can't calculate a gradient, you're able to approximate the gradient using a forward difference or a backward difference method. On the other hand, you can also use a simplex algorithm, which is very similar to the linear programming simplex algorithm. The only difference is that it does it on a simplex on the third dimension, on a continuous function. And then you've got things like point reflection, extraction, extension. In any case, you're using some gradient information to look for your objective function. On another alternative is if you go with evolutionary technique or non-gradient-based techniques, then you're not relying on the gradient at all. It's as if you're sampling the space, and I'm not going to get too much into details, but it's as if you're sampling the space and then you're moving one way or the other. So both of them have advantages and disadvantages, and some of them will work best with some kinds of problems, some of them will not work with other kinds of problems. So it's very dependent on your kind of fitness function that you're using. From my experience, if you go with the evolutionary technique, the particle swarm worked out the best for us. This seemed to be the one that gave us the best results almost consistently. And I think because it has both the best of both worlds. For the gradient base, this one, just from the central problem, this one seemed to be the best. Now, I'm going to show you two ways in how you can do it very quickly. So open the floor for discussions. The first method that I said is Rhino, which is basically a modeling tool. Now, what you can do is you can import your models into Rhino, or you can actually draw them. But if you go with that route, you don't actually draw your geometry in Rhino. You have to draw your geometry in Grasshopper, because this is what you want to optimize. Once you draw it in Grasshopper, then you link it to Galapagos. Sorry, you link. There's a missing link here. Once you draw it in Grasshopper, you have to link it to gradients using Diva for Rhino. And then you link it to Galapagos. And Galapagos does the optimization. On the other hand, if you use the gen opt route, it's a different process. So let's look at these two examples and see what we can do. This is a simple example, and it involves basically just a square room with a window. And this is a simple as it comes to Grasshopper definition of how you can do the optimization. It's basically divided into three main sections. In this particular section, you are defining your geometry. In this particular section, you are linking your geometry to the Diva for Grasshopper definition. And then in this particular part, you're making your fitness function and you're linking it to the optimization routine, which is done in Galapagos. So again, I'm going to go through the steps one by one. So the first step is you draw your model. This is basically drawing the model, but drawing it as parameters. So if you have a width of a window or say a width of a room or any kind of material, any kind of variable like that, you would start modeling it this way. Now, on this particular part, what you are doing is you're linking all the parameters to the Diva for Grasshopper interface, which is going to link it to your radiance. Once you get the result or results, you combine them all in the fitness function, and then you use this fitness function as an input to your Galapagos optimization, which is going to give you the result. So it's a sort of multi-layered approach. The thing with this approach is that it's very easy to modify geometric parameters. So if you have a width of a window or a width of a room, you'll see it's very easy to modify. It's not as easy to modify non-geometric parameters, such as, say, reflectance values or things like that. And the reason for that is Diva for Grasshopper, and correct me if I'm wrong here, does not accept inputs that are related to the material. Is that correct?
Yeah, it used to, but now you choose it from a list instead of it being an input. So.
Yeah, but can you fit it in as a parameter?
You mean
into Diva for Grasshopper?
Yeah, you can.
You can. All right. We went through around that by basically, if we needed, and this again, these are one of the silly solutions we made, is that if we needed to change a non-geometric parameter, say for a wall, we would create a list of 5 or 6 walls, each of those having the parameters, and then we would iterate through a gate. It's a silly way of doing it, but it worked for us. All right, so it's a three-step process. First of all, make sure they're installed. You can download them. Most of them, other than Diva, are for free, except in fact Diva for Rhino is free for 1 month. You guys probably know that. Draw or import your design into Rhino. Actually, you would not draw it in this case. You would have to model it using Grasshopper. And then you would link it to, you define your geometric parameters, you link it to the Diva for Grasshopper, and then you run the optimization using Galapagos. So here's just a brief, you know, the step-by-step, very quickly. It might be rudimentary, but here's what we did. So we defined 2 points for the 2 corners of the space. You use those 2 corners to create a box. Once you create the box, you explode it. Once you explode it, you have access to the different faces. Once you have access to the different faces, then here's that silly part where we take one of the faces that we wanted to vary the geometric parameters for, and we create multiple copies of, and we have a gate here. So the variable would be 0, 1, 2, 3, or 4. If you use 1, you're using this wall with that particular reflectance value. If you use 5, you're using that particular wall with that reflectance value. Then you create your window and the related and the four walls, four surfaces around it. You would define the parameters for the window, because if you wanted to change the width and the height of the window, you would then recreate the blinds. In this case, we also had blinds, and we had those as a variable. You would add the angles of the blinds as a parameter, so you're able to input that also into the debug. So there's many things you can do, and this could be like a surface, it can be a free form, whatever you want. This is just a box. Once you do that, you define your... Actually, there's a missing step here that I didn't talk about, which is the interface to the Diva for Grasshopper. And all it is basically picking up all the parameters that we wanted and fitting them into the Diva for Grasshopper and getting one output here. We use this output to create our fitness function. In this particular case, it was sort of a silly version of daylight autonomy. So you measured it, or something like... a UDI or something like that. In this particular case, it was just two sensor points we had here, and we subtract the difference, the absolute difference between the two sensor points and the desired lux level. So, and that gives us, if we take average that out and we use it, just for demonstration. I'll try and post this file in case you want to look for it, try and give it to Greg if he can post it. So if you want to download it and play around with it more, you can. Once we linked it to once we defined this, so this part defines the objective function. Now this part, obviously, if you have many points, it'll be very hard to define them using definitions. In this case, you'd have to write a VB script for that. So if you have, say, if you wanted to use all the sensor points and you wanted to calculate your own UDI or your own daylight autonomy measure as a fitness function, it might be a little difficult to draw it, become much more of a mumbo jumbo than this is. So a simple VB script would do. And then you would use that as an input to your fitness function, to your optimization algorithm. This is the Galapagos optimization algorithm. And you can see that it basically has one algorithm only, which is the genetic algorithm. Works fine for most problems. Obviously, with these kinds of techniques, there's no guarantee for a global optimum. But you can get some variations, especially if you use multistar. This is the part where basically you define the parameters of your optimization. So if you're using an evolutionary solver, you would use, for example, the mutation rates and issues like that, with multi-starts with and so on and so forth. And there's no, again, it's basically a trial and error of how you can get the solution. At the end, you would get a result, shows you how the objective function is performing and different generations that you would have. So you'd be able to track back each one of those alternatives, and if you wanted to go look at a particular generation of them, you're able to open that result and look for it. This is the same tool we used for that first example I told you that wasn't worth it, the one for the louvers. So we're able to go and look at the different designs of the louvers, and it didn't really make that much of a difference. So this is one method. Now, and again, the advantages of this method is very easy to define geometric parameters. Very easy to do that. It's not as easy to define the non-geometric parameters, but I guess now that turned out to be true. The problem with that method is that it's not very rigorous, because it's only one algorithm, and that algorithm is a genetic algorithm, and the kinds of solutions, if you have really complex problems, then you're not really able to vary a lot of stuff with that method. The second method you can use is the GenOpt. So this is the second approach. Now, GenOpt has been around for a while, and people have linked it to Energy Plus. They've linked it to different things. What we try to do is link it to gradients. And I'll show you how that can be done. It's we found that it's not a very hard process. There's a little bit of tweaking that goes around. But the advantage of GenOpt is the following, is that because it has these multiple algorithms, you're able to try different things. And if you have a really complex problem, you're much more likely to optimize, have better solutions and better answers. So how does it work? I'll just show you this slide and the one afterwards. You have four radiance files, the typical radiance files that you have. This is how we did it. We have four typical radiance files, and we have three mainly three genopt files. So there's four readme's files and three genopt files. Your typical files are your room template, your ClearSky template, your points, and your, this is the basic similar radiance setup that we all know. So let's look first of all at each one of them and see what kinds of changes you would do. The first change obviously is this naming type template. So you don't call it room, you just call it room underscore template, because that becomes the template that genopt is going to use to generate other files. So if you had parameters, for example, inside the room, inside the scene definition file, it's going to create a file called room, overwrite it, and then write another file called room and overwrite it again. So it becomes the template for the multiple files that genopt is going to create. ClearSky is the same. You can change even parameters in the ClearSky. For example, if you want to, if you have a clear in your sky file. So if you, one way is to change the direction from which the sun, if you only use that as a parameter, you can in here. The points is basically your symbol of the points that you have, and then you have your batch file that you're going to run. So the first one is the radiance batch file. This is the radiance batch, the typical radiance batch file, and you can see that it basically creates the, generates the octree, and then you do the RT trace, and then you run to create the RCAP to create your illuminance values. And similar, this is the equation that calculates the illuminance from the file that comes out is called results.dat. And one of the things that we wanted to do that I didn't know that could be done until this morning was to delimit that file. So every time you get a point, I wanted to create a delimiter before the point that I wanted, so that I can tell genopt to look for that delimiter in the file. You see what I'm saying? So you wanted to add another option, and I was talking to Greg and he was telling me it was a dash O or something, to create a delimiter before the value that you wanted. We went around that with a very silly solution that I'll show you now. But this is something that's very important, because if you can do that, you can save yourself a lot of hassle. There's another example on the web you will find, which is a very neat example. And what he has done is he wrote a Java wrapper to wrap around the batch file. So he reads the batch file, he creates another results file that is delimited. So it's just a, you know, few pages of code, but that generates the delimited file that you want. Obviously, you won't need the Java wrapper, and you won't need our solution if you know how to use the dash O option effectively. This is the points file. So again, this is the second file you would need. So the first file is this batch file. The second file you will need is this points file. And this points file tells you the points that you want. You can have many, many points as we want, but to compare the results from genopt to the ones we had from Grasshopper, we just use the same. This is exactly the same file. So I'll post the file we have from Radiant, from genopt, as well as the one you can get from Grasshopper, and you can compare both how they work. They have the same 2 points. So you can use the same 2 points and get the results and see what kind of difference you can get. Now, the solution we did is, because we didn't know how to create the delimiter, what we did is, for the z-coordinates of the sensor points, we just raised each one of them by a very small fraction. And this way, when we used our delimiter as being the 001, 002, 003, it worked, but obviously it's not the stupid way to do it. So if you can know how to dash O, that's even better. This is now the scene file that you need. The scene file is a typical scene template file. It's a typical scene template file for Radiance. The only difference is you replace the variables that you want to change, very similar to the syntax you have, the typical syntax you have for Radiance, by these 2% signs, and this becomes your variable that's going to change. So what genopt is going to do is going to find every occurrence of ref ceiling, and it's going to vary it according to another file, as we'll see right now. You can have parameters here that are non-geometric, such as reflectance values and so on. And you can also have geometric parameters. However, with geometric parameters, say the dimensions of the wall, again, this is another thing that we didn't explore with, but that will be very, very useful if you can. With geometric parameters, unlike Grasshopper, remember Grasshopper, all you had to do was just vary that slider and you can make the wall, the window smaller and the window larger. Because what it does is every time you make the window smaller, it recreates the geometry around it, right? In this particular case, if I use, say, the X or Y dimensions for a particular wall, I need to link that to the other parameters of the other walls. And I need radians to calculate that at one time. So every I need to use a variable, say, width of wall 1 would be x and would be increased by L. I also need to have another parameter down there, which will be x2 plus L. So I need to use variables in my scene description file if I wanted to create the geometry. Now, can that be done? Yes. How? It's a little bit tricky. So if, at least tricky for me, if you have a lot of geometry files, it's much easier. So if you have a lot of geometric parameters, Grasshopper is the way to go. If most of your parameters, just because if you have a really complex geometry, I see the input file becoming, or the scene description file becoming too complex to handle, maybe. On a small project, if you don't have so much time. However, if most of your parameters are just simple, non-geometric parameters, then it's easy to modify. And again, we can also change the reflectance of the blinds. So we did that. We created the same blinds we had over there, and we can change the reflectance of the blind. So that's basically the scene file. The second file, this is file number, sorry, the fourth file, the final file is the sky definition file. If you wanted to use parameters in this file, you can also do that. So again, just to recap, you have four files that you would need for the radius, the typical. The main changes you would need to do is in the room template, just add the percentage signs in front of your variables. For the clear sky template, also if you needed to use that, you can do the same. For the points, I recommend that you do not use our method. You use the dash O option to create the delimiters, and you don't even use the Java wrapper. And then the wrong template, or the back file, is the same. And this is where you would add the delimiter for the dash O for the delimiters. Now the genhop files. Now the genhop files are basically three files. There are three main files. The first file is the main file for genop and tells it where to find everything. So where to find how to run the project, where to find the files, and so on and so forth. And this is the file basically for that particular project. So every time you would have a new design, that would most probably be the one that changes all the time. It'll be this one and that one. So these two are designed, 1 and 3, are designed to be changed every time you have a new project. They're designed to be changed. This one here is just a configuration file. It's a very small file. Actually, one line of code would do here. I'll show you. And that file is just to tell GenOp how to run your software. So there's one configuration file for Energy Plus, one for Transys, one for whatever. You can modify it, obviously. And then we have one here for Radius. There's another one that I found also, tell you, by the guy in Greece. Very nice file, but he uses the Java wrapper. We just use the batch file and then if you used also the batch file with the delimiters, it would be much easier. And I'll post these three files, so you can easily just take this and play with it. The up window, this file is the first one I'm going to talk about. So the structure of this file is as follows. It has two sections, the simulation and the optimization section. So it has a simulation section and an optimization section. The simulation section has the files, the call parameters, and the objective function location. So just to go through it as quick as I can, the simulation file the simulation aspect of the initialization file has the location of your template files, and then of your input files, and then of your log files, your output configuration, and your objective function. These are basically the same files that you would have, the ones that we created, the four files we created for Radiance. The next one, these are the names of the files that GenOpt is going to create based on the template file, and you can save them in a specific path. This is the configuration file, that one line of code I told you about that tells GenOpt how to run Radiance. And if you needed a weather file for any kind of call parameters, you can. We didn't use it here because our batch file was not. If you were using Energy Plus, which we tried it, you might need to pass a weather file to it. Now this is probably the hardest, or the one that might take a lot of time. This is the objective function locations and the fitness function. Let's start at the bottom because the way that GenOp searches your output file that you define here So the output file that you define in your output section here,
all right,
is based on the is the way it searches it. It searches it from the bottom.
So it starts from the bottom, moving all the way up to search
for the first occurrence of a specific delimiter.
Now our delimiter again was that silly delimiter of 001002 to find the point after it. If you can create your own delimiter, then you would type your own here, right? And then it would just pick up that value.
It works its way down upwards, so it picks up that value, puts it in the point, picks up that value, puts it in the point. And then it does a series of calculations to come up with your sort of pseudo UDI or whatever you want to call it. It's just the absolute difference between the two points and the average of them. So it first of all subtracts 500 from them, which is the desired level, calculates the absolute value for that, subtracts 500 from the other one, calculates the absolute value for that, and then adds them both to come up with an answer. Now, if you have many, many points, this is going to be kind of hard to do. So if you want to write this, if you have like 1,000 sensor points, you're not going to write this 1,000 times. So what we have is we have a simple Excel file. We actually wrote this as a script, but we found the Excel easier to use. Simple Excel file, you drag and drop, and it's going to create this section for you. So automatically, you just create this section, you copy and paste it here, and you're done. Again, this is one of our Mickey Mouse solutions, but it worked. Then you define your optimization file. Now the optimization file refers to the command.txt, which is the next file we want to talk about. The command.txt is the second file that GenOpt needs, and really all it does is just define a bunch of parameters. These are the parameters that we defined in our main one. You vary it from the minimum to the maximum, and you can give it initial value in a step, and you can do that for all the parameters. Then you define the algorithm, the parameters for the algorithm you use. This is the genetic algorithm parameter. You can compare its genetic algorithm or its particle swarm to the one that you will get from Grasshopper. Then this is it. So these are the two parts of the file. It's just the two parts of the command file. It's basically just the parameters and the algorithm you use. Then finally, that last file is that config file that you can run. You rerun that with the batch file that we created, and then you can even pass arguments to it from the parameters. And that's it. You run it, you get your results, and then you can play out with both. So I planned that maybe you can take these and play around with them. That'd be a good start for you to try different things. Thank you.
If you would do the optimization process, like for the Windows, how much time would it take?
It would take, obviously depending on your parameters, depending on your set parameters. And the nice thing, again, that you have here is you have much more control. I don't want to get too much into the different algorithms, but you have much more control over the parameters you can change for optimization. What we found is if you run this file, for example, you would get, let's look at, for example, let's compare Grasshopper to GenOpt. So with Grasshopper, much faster. You would get this, I would say, maybe in, this is obviously a very, plateaued, the solution was very clear. There's no local minimas in this particular case. And even if we tried different multi-starts, it still gave us the same thing. So it plateaus fairly early. This took about an hour or 2 hours. With GenOpt, you can run it for 3 or 4 hours for the same example. And depending on the algorithm you use, you can even find better solutions if you leave it running for long. Again, here it's very simple. The problem is very simple. So better solutions are not really, significantly better. It's just 2 points.
Right.
How do you tackle the interaction between Monte Carlo variance and converging to a solution?
The Monte Carlo version is built inside the Radiance?
Yes, the Radiance is going to give you different answers each time you run it.
Here's the deal. Every time one of the, and this again, this is a very important point, because if you're running Grasshopper, you get stuck.
because it only has genetic algorithms. So every time you create a new generation, it's going to get other values, and then it's going to start somewhere else, start somewhere else, and start somewhere else. That might be sort of a problem, because every time you get close to an answer, you move away from it because you get another variations in Monte Carlo. Again, in some problems, it might not be that, because it gives you automatically multi-starts. So that's the way it is. Now, because our problems here are very simple, the amount of variations that you would get was not that significant to throw it off a lot. I mean, the amount of sampling you get from the Monte Carlo did not really throw it off all over the place. But I suspect that if you have a really more complex problem, that would happen. Now, in that case, I would Gen Op does not really account for that. Gen Op does not really account for... So there are some techniques, optimization techniques, for stochastic processes. Gen Op is not the tool for that. But so I don't know how stochastic is the sampling. What effect that would have on the fitness function. But if it does have an effect, then obviously you wouldn't use it. I'm not sure. That's probably a very good point, is what kind of variations you would get for an objective function, say, such as a useful daylight index.
Yeah, it becomes a real trade-off, because you have to set your parameters in radiance high enough that you've got sufficient convergence, but then it takes much longer to get your final optimization. So
yeah,
it seems a little bit
that's
curious.
True. That's true.
That's why I was about to say that.
Yes, you would say the same thing.
You just set the radius parameters.
You just rate the parameters to minimize the variance you would get from the Monte Carlo. I don't know that's...
Could you not take the kind of best children and then run it again on a higher...
That's built in inside GenOp. GenOp can do a hybrid. So it can do local searches, it can do global searches using genetic algorithms. There's one of the techniques you can use, is you do global searches using genetic algorithm, and then once you zero in, you start using a Hoekstra and Jeeve or a gradient descent method or something like that to get to the point. So it automatically does that for you. But then again, there's no guarantee.
I mean, if it's closing in on a solution, at that point you might want to up the parameters, but I don't know if GenOpt has that facility.
To opt up the parameters after a specific point.
Yeah, like as you close in, can you have it like increase the calculation?
Remember, I'm delimiting with 001 and 00, so I'm not sure if that or not. Maybe it does.
And the solution to that problem is the -o option to rcalc. If your issue is that you only have these macros that you can work with from the template files with percent, variable percent, and you're not allowed any programmability in there, you can use those as parameters to rcalc, and then use the output format of rcalc to essentially produce geometry or produce materials that are calculated from what you give to it.
Okay.
So you have quite a bit of flexibility there. But I guess the question about the optimization is whether it has a similar...
It does.
You pass a parameter that says I'm getting this close to the solution, or I've done this many iterations, or something like that?
You could, because you could. I just haven't done it. But I assume you could, because of the... This is defined as a variable. Just like you can pass, for example, in the config files, you can pass these variables. So you can file simulation.files.file1. So you can pass that to a... say to your config files. I assume you'd be able also to pass something like optimization setting dot maximum equal something like maximum rate or step number. But the idea is you want access to the current objective value function. That's
right.
What you need to
right
be able
or
to.
Or how many iterations it's done or how many.
I think you can get how many iterations has been executed already. I don't think it does have that. No, I don't think it does have that. It sounds that there's a lot of files, a lot of things to juggle with, but once you sit down and do it, actually it's doable. It works. And even if you try, we tried this simple room here just for example, but we also tried the much more complex example where we had like a larger window with different baffles and different shapes. So it works. It does give you answers.
How could you control genetic algorithm? I mean crossover options and mutation.
Could you choose some options in this?
Yes, you can vary the mutation rate, you can vary the crossover rate, you can even vary the number of genes you have, you can vary lots of things, number of generations you can do, all these are very flexible in both Grasshopper and GenOpt. The only thing is Grasshopper only has that. So you're not able to do other kinds of algorithms for it.
Does GenOpt just have a produce a parametric every variable in
yes.
Kind of like a full volatile
kind of No, you can also use it to do parametric analysis. One of the things you do here is instead of having the optimization set as an algorithm, you would change that parameter to be a parametric study instead of a Goldseek kind of thing. And then it would run all the different parameters you gave it here and would give you a surface. But the tool to use that, if you want to do that, the tool to use that is another tool that's mainly designed for response surface modeling. It's also by LDL and it's called, if I can remember correctly, it uses something called the Dakota algorithm. The Dakota algorithm is used specifically to do response surface modeling. So in addition to be able to sampling the space, it samples it in a more intelligent place so that it can even give you, if you had multiple, give you a surface or a hypersurface or whatever you want. The Dakota algorithm, I can't remember exactly the tool, but it's by LBL, it's by Sandia Labs, I think. Sandia Labs, I think they have it, and you can download that. It's called Dakota. And that's specifically designed for parametric analysis.
So it'd be interesting if it had Goldseek, and so, for example, some of the variables are quite coarse to begin with, and then, say, your window's size is increasing every 100 centimetres or something, where the reflectance is every 0.1.
Yes.
But it realises that, well, the size of the window is having a bigger effect, so it increases the amount of subdivisions of the window.
That kind of tweaking we've been doing manually.
Okay.
But I guess there might be a way to do it. I mean, that kind of tweaking, we run it a little bit, see what happens, and then we find that this is not giving us any improvement, so we stop playing with it. So it's as if we're sampling the solution space by our, by hand.
In your experiments, what are sort of typical potential of improvement that you found over this sort?
In the example, if I give you, obviously in the first example, where for the this was a real life example where we changed the shading, it was something in the order of 5%, 6%, something like that. That's why. But in the other one, where we were talking more
the conclusion was.
This particular problem was not really worth it. In this particular problem, it wasn't really worth it. But in the second problem, it was
not worth it. What did you choose then in the end?
We just choose the one that looks best. I mean, sort of an aesthetic decision. It was an aesthetic decision. Actually, I'm not sure what we did.
But that's a finding in and of itself.
Yeah.
It didn't matter.
Actually, I don't think we chose one yet. Huh? We still didn't design the louvers yet. How much worse is it? It wasn't an issue. So it didn't even go to the office. We didn't do anything with it. Now, for the second one, we actually were able to zoom down on a... But again, even for the second one, we were just using a simple objective function of an average illumination. We should have really used... optimally, the next time I think I give this presentation, I'm going to do radiance with Dasein. That's what I really should be doing. So you really should be optimizing useful daylight indices and daylight autonomies instead of making your own. All right.
Let's thank our speaker again.